Hey, back here on Downtown, your Tuesday afternoon. It's basketball time. Time to check in on the Celtics. To do that, we turn to John Corrales of the Locked On Celtics podcast and the Boston Sports Journal. John, how much did the Celtics need that win over the Wizards?
Oh, man. Just that one and the one over the Pacers. Two games that they had to fight to win, and it's nice for them to be able to win games that they had to fight for. Sometimes when you're on a streak like the Celtics had been on, you can have a game where everything goes right and the shots start to fall and it feels like, oh, okay, we're back. And then the next game could just be trash. But to go out there and struggle against Indy where Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown couldn't hit anything, and to go out there and stink against Washington for a lot of the game or not play as well and then blow the game and then steal it back, those are games that give you like a lot of confidence that the next time you face adversity, you can get through it. So that is really an important win on Sunday.
What's up with Aaron Nesmith?
Well, you know, I think it's just he's a rookie. He's a rookie, and sometimes he will struggle with certain things, and sometimes he's going to play great, and that means he's going to get some DNPs. And I think against Washington, Javonte Green got a lion's share of the minutes, and Javonte Green had been getting DNPs. So one of those two guys is going to play, and in this particular game on Sunday, Brad Stevens might have thought, hey, Javonte is a better matchup, more athletic, can get up and down the floor a little bit more, is a little bit more of a proven defender, maybe a little bit more length. So just I think that when you say coach's decision, I think it's just a simple old coach's decision.
We're talking with John Corrales here on Downtown. I can't do it justice on the radio. People need to go to Boston Sports Journal if they're not subscribers already. Pony up. It's well worth it. And look at your terrific breakdown on Kemba Walker and how he, not a traditional point guard, I think it's safe to say, but how he uses his ability and reputation as a scorer to find a way to get the ball to people.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting in that Washington game. I thought there were three clear examples of how he uses his scoring, his gravity, and just some of the nuanced ways that you, as a scorer, can create some space. So there's the lob to Robert Williams as soon as Robert Williams checked into the game, and how Kemba got into the paint and just, it's usually something new when I talk about nuance, like a little bit of an extra dribble, just a little extra time, whatever he can do to either draw defenders further away or see what that defender is going to do. So like in that alley-oop, he had Alex Len right in front of him, and he just needed to take one extra step to make it, are you going to defend me or are you going to try to defend the rim? And once he saw Alex Len was stepping towards him, that was an immediate lob. And those little things, a hop from Robin Lopez instead of a slide, understanding the aggressiveness of a blitz, feeling calm in the face of a double team, taking an extra step to further invite the double team to get that ball out and make sure your teammates have space. Those little things are the difference between simply passing the ball and maybe getting a good shot to getting the best possible look for your teammates.
Well, and the way you broke it down, it also it was great at highlighting the importance of having that innate knowledge and court awareness, too, to be able to, I guess, slow things down in your mind to see what's going to develop.
Yeah, look, that's something that if you put maybe Peyton Pritchard in that spot, in those three spots, he makes maybe one of those plays. Kemba's have been around for a while, and all of that time on the floor, all of the time in the film room, all of the practice time, that creates this just reaction. I talk a lot about thinking versus reacting on the floor. Now, I can look at the film and say, oh, Robin Lopez came out and to blitz him, but jumped as he did rather than slid. And that gave Kemba Walker the opportunity to get by him. Okay, that's one thing. Now, when you're on the floor and you see a guy jump like that, you can be, oh, wow, he jumped. And then by the time you say, you react, by the time you've thought about it and processed it, it doesn't matter. He's already on top of you. Kemba sees that hop, and immediately, boom, he's gone. And that's the type of thing. It's a muscle memory. I'll always remember there was I was watching it years and years and years ago, an MLB Network thing where they were talking to the host about turning a double play. And one of the guys was the second baseman, and he mocked through the ball to the guy coming across as the shortstop. And the guy instinctively, as he caught the ball and threw it to first, jumped to avoid an oncoming guy who was sliding into second, even though they were in a studio and there was no guy coming. It's that muscle memory that's ingrained into your body that says, I see this, boom, now I do this. And that's why we see slippage on the floor and guys don't have a chance to practice and beat that muscle memory into their bodies. That's why practice is so important, because the repetition, you do things over and over and over and over again until your body just does it naturally. I see this, boom, I'm going to do this without even thinking. And then afterwards, you're like, wow, I can't believe I did that. You know? So that type of stuff is what fuels those types of plays for Kemba Walker.
Another firing in the NBA. Did the Hawks just finally run out of patience with Lloyd Pierce? And why the change in approach?
Yeah, so it's so wild to see that situation after 2+ seasons. Like, how much can you accomplish with a young team, with Trae Young, a team that's changing a bit, in 2 seasons? And to put expectations on the team in this weird season to say, yeah, we're going to make the playoffs, and oh, you're not accomplishing your goals here. You start to see the reports of, well, Trae Young had a strained relationship, and Cam Reddish had some kind of strained relationship, and John Collins had a strained relationship. It just makes me wonder, first of all, that, you know, are these young players a little too sensitive to that approach? And maybe Lloyd Pierce was a little too maybe too strict, too unbending to what these young guys were feeling. And so he certainly, when a coach gets fired, he certainly demands some culpability. But I also, when I see these other reports, I think some of these players may have been just a little too sensitive. I wonder if this was a product of no veteran leadership on this team, a bunch of young guys who let little things get to them, and there wasn't an Al Horford type, you know, that guy who's like, you know what, you got to let that go. Or, you know, this is what he's talking about, and some kind of guy like that to smooth things over. And that's why rebuilding can be so, so tough. And then you add to that the pressure from the front office, the pressure from ownership, and ownership is so critically important. This is why I look at the Atlanta situation, compare it to Boston's situation, and just appreciate that Rick Grosbeck and that ownership group kind of let Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens do their thing. And they've been rewarded with it. Obviously, they haven't won a championship since 08. It's been a while, but they've had a lot of success, and there's no reason to say that these guys, like any sort of magic has run out. It's no reason to be impatient with them. But in Atlanta, the impatience, the lack of some veteran voices in that locker room, in a combination of things, I think led to a situation where here's Trae Young in his third year, and now he's going to be on his second head coach. And Nate McMillan, I don't know, he doesn't have a reputation for sticking around for a long time. So Trae Young could be on his third head coach by the time he's in his fifth year and starting to head into his prime. That's not a great situation.
Clippers tonight, obviously, it starts with trying to contain Kawhi and Paul George. But who else do the Celtics need to be able to stop tonight to be successful?
Well, I mean, they need to make sure that they're containing the bigs and not giving up second-chance points. The point guard play for the Clippers has been weak, so I think if the Celtics can make sure that they're clamping down on the point guards late in the game, the Clippers, it's going to be a battle of teams that don't really execute well down the stretch. And if the Celtics can ramp up defensively and put some pressure on that, the weak point guards for the Clippers, then they can maybe force some turnovers and lead into some transition opportunities late in the game. They have an opportunity to take one, even if they get down big early. There's a lot of game, and I think they'll understand that, hey, we've fought, we've come back before, and we can come back and take this. We know that they've been giving up leads, so this will be a good game for, you know, a good test of the Celtics' confidence late in late game situations.
John Corrales, Boston Sports Journal, the Locked On Celtics podcast. Appreciate it. As always, John, enjoy the game tonight, and we'll visit with you next Tuesday.
All right. Talk to you then.